This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. I'm sure you know some of the songs written by my guest Charles Strauss. Put on a Happy Face, I've Got a Lot of Living to Do, and Kids are just some of the songs from his very first Broadway show, Bye Bye Birdie. He also wrote the music for the show's Golden Boy, Applause, and the mega hit Annie. Before his Broadway career, he studied classical music with Aaron Copland and Nadia Boulanger. Now Strauss and lyricist Martin Charnin have written a sequel to their hit Annie called Annie Warbucks. It's playing in Manhattan off-Broadway. Before we meet Charles Strauss, let's hear Catherine Zaremba as Annie from the new CD Annie Warbucks.
Every other Christmas I got nothing, but this Christmas, 1933, I got everything, even a new name. I'm Annie Warbucks. Trouble kept banging at my door. Beat it, Trouble.
It's music from Annie Warbucks, Charles Strauss's latest musical. Charles Strauss, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you very much.
When was the idea for a sequel to Annie generated?
Oh, it seems like early in the last century.
Right.
Actually, the lyricist and director, Martin Charnin, he had that idea, as he did the first idea, to do Annie, which was not a good idea. But
Wait. It was not a good idea?
Well, I didn't think it was a good idea, but, you know, it's interesting what Broadway will buy. And the second idea, doing a sequel, actually came inadvertently from Columbia Pictures, because they planned and had even written the script for and hired Martin and me to do some songs for Annie 2, which then, because of an actor's strike and because of some financial complications, did not come to pass. We were left with a couple of songs, and Martin thought we ought to do Annie 2 on the live stage, which we did. It was a very eagerly financed show, and it failed in Washington, D.C., but we worked on it for 5 weeks, and at the end of 5 weeks, enough important people thought there was something very good there. And the producers stayed loyal to us, and we proceeded to work on it, first in Goodspeed, and then later the Theater Alliance took it on a tour, and all the time we never left her alone and kept polishing her, and it opened finally in New York after a great many financial aggravations and a kind of notorious publicity, considering it's such a really lighthearted and optimistic kind of show.
Were you shocked when the show flopped in Washington, or did you think it had problems?
I was shocked. Now it all seems relatively simple in hindsight about one of the things that was wrong with it, and it's a rather large thing, and I think that was that we inadvertently mocked it. Annie was our dog and little kid show, and we were delighted with the success it had enjoyed. Although it's a very witty script of Tom Meehan's, it was still looked at as something that was a kind of sentimental piece, and the world took it to its heart. But we thought, oh, now we're really smart, and we're going to do a kind of mocking version of it, and that's what we did. But we didn't realize we did. But the little children in the audience told us that we did, and the critics, and they didn't say that, but they would not accept it on that level, although it was actually, I thought, a wonderful script of Tom's, and we saw very soon then that the mistake was a rather large but simple one in one sense, and that was to do it with more sincerity.
When you wrote the songs for Annie and now for Annie Warbucks, did you have to write in a range that you were confident a kid could sing?
Well, that's really an interesting question, because yes and no. The yes is a part of my musical background. I know what kids' ranges and sopranos and tenors are. The no part is that I wanted to squeeze a little bit more out of them, because the emotional part of the music is when kids sing high. They scream. You know, I did it in Bye Bye Birdie, and in Bye Bye Birdie, they sang notes in the telephone hour that they didn't think they could sing. And actually, I had learned a lot of that. I used to work for Frank Lesser. I was his assistant for 2 years. And I remember when Frank was testing people for range, he would often have them sing
from Bushel and a Peck.
From Bushel and a Peck. And because it was, he would put it in a key with the pianist that it would be out of their range. They had to go. But because they were making fun, they could or could not hit it. Had you said, sing that note legitimately in a song like, I don't know, If I Loved You or something, they would have said they can't reach it. But when they were playing these characters, they could. So I devised, it's not my own invention, but or maybe it is, I don't know, these kids would come in and I would just have them sing Happy Birthday. Once they passed the other thing, I would have them sing a song that they didn't have to worry about anything. And so they would, Happy Birthday, Happy Birthday. See, and very often they found that they could reach notes which on their resumes they couldn't reach at all. And that was the sound I wanted. So I did write for that, in particularly in a song like Hard Knock Life and in Tomorrow, the song Tomorrow. And what happened was that at the very beginning, during our auditions, nobody could sing these songs. Today, every girl in the world sings them, which is, it's a wonderful, actually, tribute to the psychology of and, you know, and any popularity the songs have.
Let me move to the first show that you did that was a real hit, one of the Broadway classics, and that's Bye Bye Birdie. I had to tell you, I was listening to the album again last night, and I hadn't heard the score in a long time, and I was just shocked to realize that I remembered words to songs when I'd completely forgotten the song existed, like Normal American Boy. I mean, I haven't thought about that song in years, and I realized, God, I know all the words to this. And I bet so many people have that reaction when they hear songs from Bye Bye Birdie.
Yes, fortunately they do. It's a very, very much performed show. At the time, Lee Adams and Mike Stewart and I wrote it. We wrote it because it was offered us, you might say. We would have written, I guess, almost any show that was offered us. It actually wasn't even in that shape. It was just to be a show about teenagers. But had we realized that it would have that kind of commercial clout, that is, that high schools and camps and prisons, I don't know, everybody does it. It's incredible. And it keeps picking up in performances. I think we would have said, oh, let's do that show. But at the time, it was just, it was actually even a little strange. It was a bit of an embarrassment in a funny way to me and to Mike, because, well, to me particularly, because I had I'd been in serious music all my life. I'd studied classical music. I was embarking on a serious music career, that this would be the first opportunity that I'd have for a major public hearing. And then that we had this silly name, Bye Bye Birdie, it was not the show that I wanted to write, which taught me something about myself, which is I don't know where the hell I am half the time.
Let me ask you about writing the telephone hour from Bye Bye Birdie. And this is a series of phone conversations that the teenagers are having with each other. And it's not a straightforward song. I mean, you're basically setting a series of conversations to music with little interruptions and phones ringing. So what were some of your considerations when you were writing the music for that?
Well, you know, before I just answer that, I have four kids and it's come back to haunt me because I have four telephone lines and it's still every second everybody's on the phone. Anyway, beside the point, my considerations were, first of all, that it was rock and of its sort. It is rock music, though such an innocent sort that, you know, I don't like to listen to it and say I'm Mick Jagger or anybody like that, but it was rock, and I paid attention very strongly to the guitar chords, you know, that the all guitarists play on it. You know, a lot of rock music in those days, particularly, was very I don't want to say simple because that wouldn't that would be a little bit derogatory, but there were certain patterns. It became patterned in a way, and I did model it on that. But then I used a lot of I used a lot of changes of time and a lot of interjections, which is into the exact rock beat. But I kept the beat going very much, and then I used Lee and I sat and kind of carved it out together, high and, you know, the things, did they really get pinned?
Well, here's the Telephone Hour from Bye Bye Birdie, music by my guest Charles Strauss.
Hi, Margie. Hi, Alice. What's a story? Not a glory. What's the word? Hummingbird. Have you heard about Hugo and Kim? Did they really get pinned? Did she kiss him and cry? Did he pin the pin on? Or was he too shy? Well, I heard they got pinned.
Harvey Johnson, can I speak to Penelope Ann?
You about Kim.
Penelope?
I just knew it somehow.
About the prom?
I must call her right up.
Saturday?
I can't talk to you now.
Music from Bye Bye Birdie. My guest is composer Charles Strauss. He wrote the music for Bye Bye Birdie, Golden Boy, Applause, Annie, and now Annie Warbucks. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. Back with composer Charles Strauss. You studied with Nadia Boulanger. Did she give you any advice about pop music versus classical music?
Well, oddly enough, she did. This woman was the great musician of our generation in many ways. And her greatness was that she was a master analyst, not only of music, but a psychoanalyst in her own way. And she used to hear the music of her students, and she was able to isolate it. She was able to shine a spotlight on what was you and what was watered down Stravinsky. I remember when I worked with her, she asked to hear everything I'd written, and I played her my sonata and my concerto and various things, art songs and all that. And she said, well, what else? And I said, well, that's it. She said, well, no, what about, you know, your student pieces? And I played her some of them, and then she, anything else? And I said, well, I said, there was my parents, who were never into serious music at all, though they were very proud of me. I used to come home from college and play them all these pieces that sounded like watered-down Bartok, really, but they were very serious kind of things. I was really, you know, into it, and I could see they were proud of me, but they didn't really...
respond.
Yeah, not really. I mean, I think so. My mother was just always so nervous for me. But I remember writing a piece that I considered my party piece that I could play that they could show off to my aunt. I had an Aunt Stella... who was hard of hearing to begin with, but it was she was over at the house a lot, and I wrote this piece, and it was really, you know, I look back at it today, kind of saucy or something. It was very lighthearted, and they loved it. Everybody liked it, so it became my piece, and I played that for her, which I very rarely, I didn't do that for anybody except, you know, a couple of relatives, and she said, well, what else? And I said, well, I said, when my brother, he had been in the Navy, and when he came home from his first tour of duty or his boot camp, whatever, I had written, I laugh because it was a funny moment in my life. And I said, I wrote this little song for him called Welcome Home, Able-Bodied Seaman Strauss. See? And she said, may I hear that? Oh, I said I could. No, she said, please. And so there with this venerable woman, I played this silly song. She said, I see. She said, anything else? And I said, this makes me laugh. I said, I used to go out with a girl. I really liked her. Her name was Janet. And we lived on the Upper West Side of New York. And I wrote this song, but it was a joke called Moon Over 83rd Street. She said, play this for me. Here I am in Paris, you know, with an intimate of Stravinsky's and every American composer that you could think of having studied with this great woman. So I played Moon Over 83rd Street. And she said, ah, good. Now we go back to this, whatever. So we went back to... towards the end of my thing, she said to me something that nobody had ever said to me. She said that you have a great talent for light music.
May I make a request?
Sure.
Could you sing one of the songs that you played for her?
Wait a second. The Welcome Home, Mabel Montgomery Jones. You're right. No, I can't sing that one. Moon Over It. Oh, Moon. This is the funniest interview I've ever done. Moon Over 83rd Street with Shrafts right below. A moon over 83rd Street, my heart's all aglow. You, Janet, in the lamplight, I hear something call. I hear something dull. I'm yours, body and soul. I think that was the last one. It was meant partly as a jest. I mean, but that was it. There's a first performance for you.
So, but it helped you. It helped you find out that that's what you should be doing is writing pop tunes.
That was her genius. That's why I can laugh at it. I can also laugh at it because I've had some successful shows. But her genius was really taking a young kid like me. I was quite young when I was there. I was around 18 or so, and I know from my own experience with my own children what it is to be searching for an identity, and she, in her soft, brilliant way, was able to contribute to my identifying who I was.
Mm-hmm. I want to close with the story behind one of your most famous songs, and this is the song from Annie, Tomorrow. Tell us about writing the song, what you intended when you wrote it, and the song has really taken on a life of its own. The song seems to alternate between major and minor keys, no?
Yes, it does. There are a number of feelings I have about the song. The first one always had been and still stays with me. I feel somebody, a trooper is going to knock on my door and say, all right, come with us, you're under arrest, because... it's the one song in the show, the one song of a personal nature in the show that could not have been written in the 30s. I could say the same perhaps for Hard Knock Life, but Hard Knock Life was a bit of dramatic music where I was kind of outside it in a way. But here's a song of a girl during the Depression, and this song is definitely could only have been written in the 70s, the harmonies and the kind of melodic. So I thought... if nothing else, I mean, I didn't think the show was going to be successful, but I certainly felt as though critics were going to say, now, wait a second, how could they write this? Everything else was, we'd like to thank you, Herbert Hoover, and I don't need anything but you. It kind of, I don't like the word pastiche because I filter it, I hope, through my own intelligence, but they were kind of pastiches using Harry Warren and Cole Porter and those kind of Gershwin composers as my as the filter, so to speak. But that song, no, and it was just out of another era completely. So that was my first thing about it. The second thing about it was that nobody could sing it because it was so rangy.
Mm-hmm.
And the third thing about it, which is, it's just curious. I've worked with a number of collaborators, though I've worked mostly with Lee Adams. But, I've done a show with Sammy Kahn, with Alan J. Lerner, with Richard Maltby. I mean, there have just been a lot of them, Stephen Schwartz in my life, though not those particularly, but all the collaborators along the way, I had this song and I played it for many of them. And they all said, yeah, no, okay, what else do you have? And Martin and I were looking for a song of hope at that moment. And I played him. Actually, it wasn't a whole song. I had written it for a movie, this theme for an industrial film that I did. And I always liked the theme. And Martin picked up on it. And I had no idea. I certainly didn't think it was going to be a big success. I did think that it got an awfully big hand in the theater when Andrea sang it. But I thought it was the set. Martin had made a nice move with the set. That it changed, she went behind, and then she wasn't there. So I always thought, gee, they're applauding, that's set.
So this is a trunk song that every lyricist you work with rejected, and it finally went on
point,
to be a big
success. At that point, every lyricist, yeah.
All right. Well, let's hear it, and let me say it's been a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Terry. For me, it's great.
Composer Charles Strauss, his latest musical, Annie Warbucks, is playing off Broadway. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.